Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports, and the host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Doing a lot of really great stuff leading up to draft night on Thursday on the NBA side. So make sure you're following the Locked On NBA Network on Twitter and Facebook as well. 331-979-1369. We're doing mailbag tomorrow. All going to be draft-centric. So if you've got any comments, questions leading up to the last 48 hours before draft night, we want to hear those from you. So send us your texts, your voicemails at 331-979-1369. All right, Matt, today on the show, I know you and I have spent a lot of time over the last 6-8 weeks, and I mean, you could even extend this all the way out to the middle of the season when we were talking about prospects. But finally, I think we both have our lists narrowed down at number 7 and at number 22, so we want to do both of those today on the show, as well as we want to run through some Bulls draft history for those that might not be keen on who the Bulls drafted over the last 15 or 20 years. Just kind of bring up those names, talk about those prospects and what they turned out to be as far as NBA players. But before we do that, how you doing?
Doing all right, Jordan. Getting excited, man. I feel like everybody in Bulls Nation should just be playing Final Countdown on loop for the next 72 hours as we get as we get closer to this NBA draft. I feel like I know you and I are ready for it. I feel like Bulls Nation has been talking this draft to death because we know it is so critical to where this rebuild goes from here. And we're finally in the week, draft week, and now you're seeing on Twitter today all of these players with, you know, tweeting videos of themselves, you know, walking through airports, hopping on planes, getting ready to head out to New York for the draft. And it's like, oh, okay, like it's finally upon us. It's finally here. And I could not be more ready, because at least once it happens, then we'll get to the next phase where we get to do draft grades and talk about what the Bulls picks mean for the team and the rotation this upcoming season. And then from there, move into free agency. And, you know, we've talked about how we don't think the Bulls are going to be big players in free agency, but even across the NBA, it is going to be a fascinating summer of free agency with some big names potentially changing teams. So I'm ready. I'm ready to get this draft over with.
I'm with you there. And another thing, too, I think that's cool that's going to be happening this summer for the first time ever is all 30 teams are going to be in the same spot for Summer League, which is really awesome. And that's what should have happened from the start. And they're also going to televise every single Summer League game. So you're going to be able to have the opportunity to watch both of these prospects that the Bulls draft at number 7 and number 22. It's going to give you an idea of how they play in early on against some action. I know I had mentioned this on Friday's episode. People were wondering whether or not Lauri Markkanen was going to play in Summer League. He is not going to play in Summer League, probably for good cause. I know he had some commitments over in Finland with the national team, and the Bulls seemed okay with that, not needing him to play in Summer League in year two. And I know most players do, but if we're being honest here, I don't think Lauri Markkanen gains anything really productive from playing in Summer League this year. So it's a good thing that he's going to go overseas and keep with those commitments he has with the national team in Finland. But I want to start with our picks at number 7 here. So Matt and I, Matt, we're just going to go back and forth, start with our top five. We're going to start from five all the way down to one. Give me your fifth most, I guess, excited pick at number five as far as fit. I put it into accountability of whether or not these guys are going to be available at number seven, what the fit is for the Bulls, what the upside of all of these prospects are, and how they might gel with the other guys already on this roster. So with that said, let's start at number five. So for me, on my list, I have at number five, Trae Young. And this might not come as a surprise. I've already said it a few times over the last couple of weeks that I think the most disappointing pick here at number seven, for me at least, would be Trae Young. And I know this is a polarizing topic among Bulls fans, and there's still a lot of Bulls fans out there that feel like if Michael Porter Jr. is off the table and Trae Young's available there at number seven, people are going to want to take him and seem like they are bought into his offensive explosiveness and can deal with having to teach Trae Young how to play defense in the NBA.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I didn't even put him on my list because that's how much I will be disappointed if that's how this draft ends up going. And Trae Young is what the Bulls deem to be best available at five or at seven. So I just left Trae Young off my list. So at five, I have Kevin Knox, the wing prospect from Kentucky. Of the top tier 3-and-D wing kind of players in this 2018 draft class, with Knox and Bridges from Nova and Bridges from Michigan State, Knox to me seems like the biggest project at this point. And, you know, I believe is the youngest of them. Certainly, he and Miles are significantly younger than Mikhail Bridges, the 3-year player from Nova. Knox to me definitely has potential, and he's 6'9". He's got great size to be one of those versatile players that Paxson has talked about this Bulls roster needing. But to me, I'm worried about how much of a project he is. So if the Bulls are going with a wing as opposed to a big with that seventh pick, I have him as the last option if I'm the Bulls front.
That's curious. I don't even have Kevin Knox on my list as well. But the one thing I was thinking about is the way his game's going to translate to the NBA. Is he going to be more of a four? Like, we had talked about some comps for his game being either Paul George or Tobias Harris. I'm leaning more towards Tobias Harris than anything else. And the comp there is he might fit more as a four in the NBA than maybe as a three. And I don't know how that would play with the Bulls, but certainly would be an exciting pick too and would be a little bit more of a project. I didn't feel like he was used properly at Kentucky the way that maybe he should have been. Then again, I when you look at these top programs and have top prospects, you got to keep in mind the fact that there's top 50, top 100, multiple top 100 prospects on these teams. And all these guys, for the most part, are 1 year trying to figure out how to play together and how to maximize all of their potential. So I always keep that in mind when I'm thinking about guys coming from top programs. Wendell Carter Jr. being one from Duke. You mentioned Kevin Knox here. Marvin Bagley as well from Duke too. So I always keep that in mind when I'm thinking about prospects at the elite level programs and who they're playing with there, whether or not their potential was actually maximized. So I like Kevin Knox. I'm wondering if the Bulls, even if they're interested and he's hanging around 10 to 12 in this lottery, if they could find a way to trade up and use that number 22 pick plus whatever they have on this roster to add him to maybe a Wendell Carter Jr. or a Marvin Bagley or a Mo Bamba. So definitely an interesting pick. I like that one. So coming in at number four, it was the pick that we took in our Locked On Mock NBA draft. Now, I don't really think he's going to be available here at number seven, but I threw him there on there just in case because I've heard two or three names that might slide all the way down past six. I don't know if that's going to happen with this guy, but Marvin Bagley's at number four. He doesn't really have a position as far as where he might be best fit in the NBA. We've talked about how he might translate more as a four than a five. In playing alongside Lauri Markkanen, two might be a little bit difficult. He's not as big of a rim protector and a shot blocker. He's more of an offensive player to start, so that's something that Marvin Bagley's going to have to learn. But the ceiling is obviously there, and if the Bulls have any chance at this guy, I think you draft him and you figure out positional basketball later, and you just see what you have in the type of ceiling that he has, and also the athleticism. The guy can jump out of the gym, so I don't think I'm worried necessarily with him not being a rim protector and a shot blocker right away if this happens to fall all the way to the Bulls at number 7. So I got Marvin Bagley at number 4.
That's fair. I didn't even include him because I'm assuming that he will be off the board by the time the Bulls are picking at 7. There have been some rumors and whispers recently that if one of the bigs is going to fall, it might be Bagley. Even still, I don't see that happening. I don't see him being on the board at 7, so he's not on my list. At 4, I have one of the two Bridges, and at 4, I have Mikal Bridges of Nova, who I mentioned recently when talking about Knox. A 22-year-old plug-and-play guy who is not by any means going to be a sexy pick that Bulls fans can be excited about, but certainly a guy that you can plug and play right away at a position of need, and probably when you're talking about high floor versus high ceiling guys, and this is something you and I have debated about, he's definitely more high floor than high ceiling. And some people are just not enthused with him because they think he doesn't have all-star kind of potential compared to some of these other higher risk players in the top tier of this draft. To me, he's number 4 on my list if the Bulls are picking at 7. I think he's kind of a reach at 7. But he absolutely would be a player that would make this Bulls team better right away.
Yeah, I don't even have Mikal Bridges on my list now going into this week because of the talk about how he might be sliding, and the volatility between, I feel like, picks 3 and 6 are really going to determine what the Bulls take at 7. And I don't even have him on my list. I feel like the connections at the 76ers at the pick at number 10, the infatuation with the Knicks too as well with Mikal Bridges, I think makes a lot of sense at 9 and 10. So another guy that if the Bulls are looking to get back in the late lottery, I think that guy might hang around at 10 to 12. Same thing with Kevin Knox. But I didn't really have him on my board either because I felt like you can get the same type of player at number 22 in a guy like Chandler Hutchison that Mikal Bridges is. And so if we're looking at taking a project at number 7, a 19-year-old kid, I'd rather take the more sure thing at number 22 and take the wing player that seems to be similar to Mikal Bridges in Chandler Hutchison. So I'm willing to take the risk on the plugging play guy, the 4-year guy in Chandler Hutchison at number 22 rather than taking Mikal Bridges at number 7. So I didn't even have him on my list. Going into number 3 would be Michael Porter Jr. I put him on this list. I put him in the middle because, like we had said, all the concerns with the back injury and the back problems that he's got and maybe some of the character issues coming in and sort of the way he's played this whole entire media circus as far as his workouts and canceling his workouts, I think that all plays a factor. And I think a little bit of the unknown too of him playing college basketball and the lack of playing college basketball this season. But I still don't want to take anything away from what we've talked about when he was in high school, coming into going to Missouri and still being considered one of the top picks in the draft back in October. So I'm going to take everything that you have as far as upside with Michael Porter Jr. And I wouldn't be super disappointed if the Bulls took him here. It's just a huge risk. And are the Bulls willing to take that risk on a guy like Michael Porter Jr. or Trae Young and potentially set back this rebuild a few years if one of these guys decides to bust? But I put him in the middle of my hopefuls for the Bulls and the best fit there. And I think he might be available at number 7. But then again, you never know what the Kings are going to do at 2, and you never know what the Grizzlies might do at 4, and you never know what Dallas might do at 5. So those are three other teams ahead of the Bulls that might be interested in Michael Porter Jr. But I'm kind of up in the air on him. I see the upside, and I also see a lot of the negatives too. So it's definitely a high risk, high reward type of player.
Yeah, you know how I feel about the high risk part of that equation, and that's why I left Michael Porter Jr. off of my list, just like I left Trae Young off of my list. I mean, you call me crazy, but the back injury risk to me is just too severe. I'm staying away from it as far away from it as I can. For me, at number 3, it's the other Bridges. It's Miles Bridges of Michigan State. I think he is a better athlete than Mikal Bridges. He's younger by a year and a half, and he might not be the shooter that Mikal is right now, but I certainly think he has that potential, and they're comparable in size, and he's going to give you versatility guarding multiple positions on the defensive end. And he does also, I think, have some potential to become a better ball handler than Mikal Bridges does. So the fact that he is right now stronger and a better athlete than Mikal Bridges, I have Miles Bridges as the top of my, if the Bulls take a wing with the seventh pick, he's the one that's highest on my list.
You think that's a reach at all? Like, if, out of those three guys that you talked about, Kevin Knox, Miles Bridges, and Mikal Bridges, which one do you think is the biggest reach at number seven if the Bulls do take a wing player?
To me, it seems like Mikal is the biggest reach because people are talking about Mikal Bridges as having the lowest ceiling of those three guys, whereas Knox and Miles are more of a project than a ready now player. So I guess it just depends on what your definition of reach is. If are you reaching if you're taking a guy you know who can come in and contribute right away as a rookie, or are you reaching if you're taking a project who is probably more suited to be in the back end of the lottery and you don't know what kind of production you're going to get from him over the course of his NBA career, or at least through a rookie contract with the Bulls. So to me, the biggest reach would be Mikal Bridges, just because people talk about him as having the lowest capped ceiling of that trio of players.
I really like Miles Bridges too, and that's why I always look at the Clippers picks at 12 and 13 as a little. I feel a little bit jealous because of you've got two back end lottery picks, and I feel like what's going to go between 10 and 14, you're still going to get quality picks. We talked about Robert Williams as well. That was somebody that worked out for the Bulls. Lonnie Walker worked out for the Bulls too. All these guys that are in the late lottery, Miles Bridges being one of them too, and interviewed with the Bulls as well. So I like his game too. I don't know about taking him at number seven. I think I would rather take a risk on one of these guys like Porter or Trae Young or even Mo Bamba if he slips down to number seven. So I can't deny what you're saying about any of those wing players, though. Kevin Knox or Miles Bridges, I like both of those guys. I think I'd be a little bit more disappointed out of the trio of those three with Mikal Bridges just because of the age. And like you had said, the ceiling as well isn't as high as maybe those other two guys. And as far as the timeline, I want to shy away at number seven in the lottery of taking a guy that's 22 years old and going to be 23, not even halfway through this season.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all in the fact that really, if the Bulls were to take any three of those guys at seven, it would be a reach. Absolutely. I mean, all three of them, it would be a reach. For me, it's about avoiding the risk of Michael Porter Jr. and leaving him off my list and avoiding the bust potential of Trae Young and also leaving him off my list.
All right, at number two, I have Wendell Carter Jr. Obviously, this has been the big talk around a lot of Bulls heads. People are saying that if he is available at number seven, if the Bulls stand pat, this would be make the most sense for the Bulls. Wendell Carter Jr. at 19 years old, I feel like if you compare him to Mo Bamba, he's a little bit more ready-made to play in the NBA, and I think as far as offensive upside right now, I think you can point to Wendell Carter Jr. over Mo Bamba. On the flip side of that, though, Mo Bamba is definitely a better rim protector, better defensive player to start. Not to say that Wendell Carter Jr. can't develop that game. I like that Wendell Carter Jr. can step out and make the three, and he proved that in college. Obviously, he only took around 1.5 threes per game back in Duke, but he shot it at 41.3% three-pointer. And so between that, like him and Markkanen being able to step out in the three and just spread the offense out completely, I like his game here. And if Mo Bamba's off the board, I'm probably taking Wendell Carter Jr. at number seven.
I am right there with you. I also have Wendell Carter Jr. at number two on my list for all the reasons you just said.
And then finally, my number one pick here, and the person that I would be most excited about to come to the Chicago Bulls at number seven would be just that, in Mohamed Bamba. So to look at a guy that people might have some questions as far as his offensive game goes, the wingspan has me. I don't know what it is, but I'm infatuated with a center, especially. I was infatuated with Thon Maker last year when he was in the draft just because of his ball handling skills and how big he was and just the length. And I don't know. That's just me as far as a basketball player goes. But the wingspan and the ability to be able to step out and take the three, and that's something he's been working on this offseason. Obviously, you can see a million clips of that on Twitter of him just knocking down threes. Whether or not that translates into actual gameplay, that'll remain to be seen. But I think a raw rim protector going and complimenting Lauri Markkanen down low is infatuating to me. So I would love to see that. Just another thing about Mohamed Bamba real quick. He averaged 3.7 blocks in college. His defensive box plus minus was an 8.9. He led the Big 12 in rebounding. He led the Big 12 in defensive rebounding. He led the Big 12 in blocks this season with nearly 4 blocks a game. And he had the best defensive rating in the Big 12. So I look at that, and I also look at the track record of Texas over the last couple of years, and Shaka Smart down there. I mean, they've developed big men and guys that are comparable and capable of playing in the NBA. I look at Jarrett Allen from last season as well, and I look at Miles Turner from 2 seasons ago. Both of those guys seem to be players that could be productive role players and even maybe borderline stars in this league. I look at Miles Turner maybe as a borderline star more so than Jarrett Allen so far. He also shot 54% in conference play and had back-to-back 20-plus point nights against 2 Big 12 teams. So I look at that, and he's a solid free throw shooter too. So the offensive game is going to have some work, and you're going to have to see if it translates to the NBA. But I really like Mohamed Bamba.
He's number one for me as well. I think, as you said, Carter Jr. might be the more ready player and might have a safer, higher floor than Bamba. And certainly Wendell Carter Jr. projects to have higher offensive upside than Bamba right now. You mentioned the fact that Bamba's been working on his range part of his game this offseason, and who knows if that can translate. But we know already from his year at Duke that Wendell Carter Jr. isn't afraid to take the three ball and make it. But it's just, it's that wingspan, man. I mean, it is a historic 7'10" wingspan. How do you say no to that? How do you say no to pairing that guy with Lauri Markkanen in the front court, having a 7-footer at the four who can stretch the floor and also is building his own offensive arsenal down on the block, which we saw some of in his rookie year, and a guy like Bamba who can anchor that defense and be a pick-and-roll guy and a rim runner, and hopefully someday also add that spacing element to his game as well. I mean, it is a generational thing to see a guy with the athletic gifts that Mo Bamba has. And of everybody that we've talked about on our respective lists, I think he's the least likely to be there at 7, but it's certainly not impossible. And then to cap that off, I would say two guys that aren't on my list because I don't think it's anywhere close to possible that they're there at 7, but the two guys I'm highest on in this draft and would do cartwheels down Clark Street if I somehow am sitting there Thursday night and either of them are on the board. To me, the best two players in this draft are Luka Doncic and Jaren Jackson Jr. But not on my list because I don't think it's realistic that either of them are there at 7.
I'm so glad you made honorable mentions because I did the same thing, and those two names were literally the two names on my honorable mentions too. I agree.
Hey, see, Jordan, we can agree on things. What do you know?
Jaren Jackson Jr., man, I don't think he's going to be there either, and there's a slight possibility that he could fall, you know, out of the top 5. Very, very slight possibility, and that would include Michael Porter Jr. being taken in the top 5 or either Trey Young taking there too. I really like his game as well, and I think his athleticism is just through the roof and would be a player to complement Lauri Markkanen as well. Doncic too, you know, as much slander as he gets for being a European player, people talk about his European game translating to the NBA and whether he's quick enough, his feet are quick enough, he's willing to play defense, and he also had that character problem too as well that we've heard slight problems with. I don't buy too much into that, but I think you're right, and both of those players are probably my two favorite in this draft outside of DeAndre Ayton too. I really like DeAndre Ayton as well. There's no chance he's going to be there. I think he's going number one or number two. So yeah, I'm with you on those three guys. The one other thing I wanted to say about Mo Bamba real quick, as far as his weaknesses and what might be a little bit troubling if you do take him at number 7, is obviously his offensive game is going to need some work, and you're going to have to see if that translates to the NBA. I looked at the struggles with Thon Maker up in Milwaukee this season, and obviously they're two different, a little bit different types of players and had different roles for their teams, but he struggled at times. As much as his offensive game was touted coming into the draft, he struggled at times this season with the Milwaukee Bucks. I also look at his perimeter shooting. You know, he talked about how his three-point shooting was night and day since college, but he only shot 27.5% from three, and he was taking over two three-pointers per game. So he said it's like night and day, but I wouldn't bank on it early on in his career. Another thing is he looks lost at times. He's not a guy that you're going to be able to run the offense through. So if you have an entry pass and you're looking for Mo Bamba to try to set the offense, I don't think that's going to be really, really an option, especially early on in his career. So you're going to need to rely more heavily on Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, and Lauri Markkanen as far as running the ball and keeping the ball really out of Mohamed Bamba's hands on the offensive side for the majority of the part. But I look at his game and people will say, well, if he can't play offense and he can't shoot and his offense doesn't translate to the NBA, then why would you take a guy at number seven there?
Because the dude's got a 7'10 wingspan, for crying out loud. It's as simple as that.
And the other thing too is, and this might even go side by side with Wendell Carter Jr. too taking at number seven, is like Markkanen, LaVine, and Dunn are supposed to be your top three scorers on this team, right? You want those guys taking the most amount of shots as far as your offensive weapons. So if you got Markkanen and LaVine and Dunn taking anywhere between 12 and 15 shots, you don't really need Mohamed Bamba or Wendell Carter Jr. to be that type of offensive superstar right away. So that's something that's not even concerning.
Now, the Bulls need to add, in an ideal situation, a great talent, a team-changing talent who doesn't need the ball in their hands to be an effective player on a five-man roster or a five-man lineup.
Completely agree. We got to take a short break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about pick number 22, the top five on our list as far as who we like there at number 22, and then as well as give you guys a little bit of history on the Chicago Bulls draft picks over the last 15, 20 years, how they fared as far as their NBA career goes and how they were a fit with the Bulls here in Chicago. So stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. We'll be right back. Back here on Locked On Bulls, talking about the top five for both Matt Peck and I at the number 22 pick, the Bulls having two picks in this draft again. It's been a little bit more interesting, and I know I want to preface my top five at least with whoever the Bulls take at number seven, I think is going to be indicative of who they decide to take at number 22. Depending on who falls at number seven and whether or not the Bulls take a risk there, I think it's going to be a little bit more curious about who they take at number 22 and what the fit would be as far as players and position wise. But let's start from five, Matt. I want you to kick this off. Start with your number five at number 22.
All right. So for me, I started my list with five, and this is the only guy for this scenario where, let's say the Bulls actually do kind of reach and take their wing with their seventh pick and they take one of the Bridges or they take Knox, then in that case, I would see the Bulls looking to add a big with their 22nd pick because they didn't get Bamba and they didn't get Wendell Carter Jr., whoever it may have been at seven. So for that reason, number five on my list is Mitchell Robinson, who has kind of a weird history leading up to the draft and unenrolled from Western Kentucky and didn't really play any team basketball this past year, but is young, kind of raw, 20 years old, a guy who might be able to play both front court positions in the league, but definitely looks to be more of a center than a power forward. And some people are talking about him being the best physically talented and gifted athlete at the center position in this draft as far as a combination of length and athleticism. People are talking about him maybe actually being a better shot blocker than Mo Bamba and Jaren Jackson Jr. and all of those guys. So he's definitely a bit of a risk, and that's why he is, and you know, a bit of a risk, a bit of an unknown as far as the guys who played college ball this past season. That's why I think he's projected to go lower in this first round, somewhere in the 20s. If the Bulls take a wing at seven, I wouldn't mind seeing them take a flyer on Mitchell Robinson at 22.
I have Mitchell Robinson at number three. I think for all the reasons you had just said, the little bit of the unknown because he didn't play at Western Kentucky and opted out, didn't play in any organized basketball as far as gameplay goes this year. So that's why I hit him at number three too, because of the odds that the Bulls might take a wing at number seven, whether that's Kevin Knox, Mikal Bridges, Michael Porter Jr., whoever it is. I'm with you there, and I think he's a little bit higher up on my board than some other guys. So at number five, I have Josh Okogie from Georgia Tech. I know he's been kind of, there's been a high variance of where they might think he goes, and to be honest with you, it seems like he's been pushed now almost into the late teens, so he might not be available at number 22, and if the Bulls decide not to take a wing here, I doubt that they look at more so of a guard, so that's why he's five on my list. But man, the guy's got crazy athletic talent, can shoot the ball really well, can shoot the three the same way shoot it super well. So a guy like that and has sort of a defensive mindset as well. And I remember watching him at Georgia Tech just from his rookie year back into his sophomore year. I think he's going to be a great talent. So if the Bulls are looking for a player and they take a wing at number seven and they want to add to their guard depth, I think this guy, Josh Okogie from Georgia Tech, would be a good pick.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a sneaky pick that's probably going to go somewhere in the late part of the first round. He's not on my list, but would be interesting for the Bulls to take him. For me at number four, I've got Kevin Huerter. He's been definitely rocketing up people's draft boards. I think ESPN's latest mock has him going right before the Bulls to Utah at 21. The combo shooting guard, small forward out of Maryland, still young, 6'7". Definitely wouldn't hurt getting him in the gym a little bit. But his draft stock has just been rising and rising and rising. And I think a lot of that has to do with some of the numbers he put up at the combine. And again, so this is now for the remainder of my list, assuming that the Bulls do take a big with that number seven pick and are looking to add to their wing depth, or maybe they take Trae Young at point guard and are looking to add to their wing depth at 22. There is a bit of a question mark with Huerter now. He had that surgery he had the torn ligaments in his right hand, which is kind of a little bit of a question mark or a asterisk of concern there. Only expected to need 2 months or so to recover from that hand surgery. He's my number four.
I have Kevin Huerter at number two. I started watching film on Kevin Huerter just from Maryland last season, and I think I continue to fall in love with his game, especially if the Bulls do take a big here and you can kind of play him in that combo two or three. His ability to play defense, he's got some weaknesses. He doesn't know how to get off a screen that well on defense, so that might be a little bit troubling trying to play the three in the NBA. But he can knock down the three at a high clip. His shot is so quick. He's got great handles, too. I like his toughness, too. I think he doesn't give up on a play like some other players that we've talked about, especially on this Bulls team, who like to give up on the defensive end of the ball, eyes looking at you, Zach LaVine. But Kevin Huerter, I think, is underrated in this draft, and I think he maybe there's the question marks because of that wrist. But if they don't decide to take, if they decide to take a combo wing/guard, I really like Kevin Herter's game, and I looked at the Lakers as being a team that might be infatuated with him, and even as high as the San Antonio Spurs at 18 might decide to take him there. But I think you're right about the wrist injury, too. That's a little bit worrisome, and at times on defense he looks a little bit lost, but I like his aggressiveness, and I think he can shoot the ball really well and be a solid piece at number 22 to add to this team. At number four, though, I had Dante DiVincenzo from Villanova. This guy is kind of volatile as well. He's risen up draft boards, especially from the NBA combine, just because of the numbers and the size and his ability to shoot the ball at Villanova and knock down clutch shots, I think, is an important part to his game. People have been impressed with him, and I don't know. I don't know how he fits on this Bulls team at number 22. If you're really trying to look for a wing, that's if the Bulls do take somebody like Mikal Bridges, Kevin Knox, Michael Porter Jr., maybe they go for that guard depth again. So that's why I had him at number four, and I started my list with two sort of guard play more so than a wing style player. But Dante DiVincenzo, I mean, the athletic ability is there. The measurements are there as well. So that's why I like him at number four.
That's fair. I just, I left him off because, I mean, you mentioned it. I'm not really exactly sure where he would fit in this Bulls rotation right now. I mean, he's a versatile guard. He could probably play on the ball or off the ball, but between Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine, I just don't really know where he fits. So I didn't leave him on my list, but he's certainly a guy that has been just jumping up people's draft boards and might actually go from being a guy some originally thought early second round to now he might actually go in the teens. Who knows? For number three on my list, it's the international prospect, Jonan Musa, who's been playing in the Croatian league, and a small forward who's 6'9" and can do a little bit of putting the ball on the floor and can absolutely stroke it from range. The one hang up for him with me is that he appears to be more of a question mark or just a flat out weakness on his defensive side of the ball, whereas some of the other late first round prospects at the 3-and-D spot actually have the D element of that to their game, where I think Musa kind of struggles in that department. But he absolutely would be somebody that the Bulls could throw in there right away. He's young. He's only 19. But I think playing professionally in Europe already for a while, he could come in and score for this Bulls team right away without needing the ball in his hands. And I think that's something the Bulls are looking for at that spot. So he's my number three.
I left him off my board because I honestly don't think he's going to be available at number 22. I think you talked about the Utah Jazz in Kevin Huerter. I think that same goes with Jana Musa. Same thing with the San Antonio Spurs. And I mean, I could even look at somebody like the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are picking ahead of the Bulls, who might be interested in him as well. So that's kind of why I left him off. There wasn't a whole lot of game film to be able to watch and to be able to manipulate his sort of game and his style. So that's always a question mark when you're taking an international player late in the first round. I know we talked about Doncic and how people shouldn't knock him for being an international player. So I don't want to do that to Jana Musa either. But yeah, question marks there. And I honestly don't think he's going to be available at number 22. So I obviously said at number three, I would take Mitchell Robinson. I can pretty much skip over that at number three. So who do you have at number two?
My number two right now is Chandler Hutchison. I don't know, sometime over the last 48 hours or so have flipped my opinion just a little bit about the best of the bunch when it comes to the wings that the Bulls might take a flyer on with the 22 pick. Hutchison, we've talked about him at length on this show, especially because earlier there were reports that the Bulls were the team that promised him a draft spot, and that's why he backed out of the combine. But exactly everything you need from the position of the three that the Bulls really need help at right now, probably has the, maybe not the highest, but one of the higher upsides on the defensive side of the ball of all of these wings that the Bulls might be looking at 22, and is a multi-year player. So, you know, some Bulls fans might not like the fact that he's 22. The Bulls front office have no problem with the fact that he's 22. And, you know, you say, well, does that fit into the timeline of the rebuild? I don't necessarily know if that's really a big concern for the Bulls right now. 22 is still only 22. The guy, who knows where he'll go and if the Bulls re-sign him. But if they like what they see from him on a rookie deal, they can re-sign him at 25 or 26 or whatever the case may be. He just has a lot of the tools that the Bulls are looking for right now at that spot. That's why he's my number two.
So I told you I had Kevin Huerter at number two. So obviously you know what I feel like there. I think if Chandler Hutchison is off the board before then, I would love for them to take Kevin Huerter. And to go to my number one is Chandler Hutchison. And I understand the concerns that Bulls fans might have with the connections and the agents and all of that and the inner workings, but I said this before, like, I don't think that should really be a knock on Chandler Hutchison as far as his game goes, especially if they take a big or they take a point guard in this draft. I think you have to go with a wing player that makes sense for the Bulls. And as far as history tells us, like, they really like four-year players. And what Chandler Hutchison did in his senior year, I think, is fantastic. I look back at the game against Colorado State where he scored 44 points, including a buzzer beater to knock them off. Runs the floor really well, is aggressive as hell. I think he drives to the basket with zero fear. The defensive side of the ball, too, as well. He's a phenomenal defensive rebounder. He's actually in the top 10 percentile as far as any college basketball player goes at the wing position as far as defensive rebounding goes. So I think at a guy at number 22 with 4 years of experience in college, I'm safer taking a guy that's that age at number 22 rather than a lottery pick that maybe has a little bit more of a less of a higher ceiling than maybe somebody at 22 where you can say, okay, maybe this is a little bit more of a sure bet here. And if he surprises us and becomes better than we thought, then that's just another plus. I love Chandler Hutchison's game, and I know the connections bother people and the inner workings and him shutting down his game. I also want to mention quickly, too, because I don't know if this got overpassed on Friday's episode from some fans, and I know I didn't mention it to you as well, but the Draft Express guys released an article on Friday afternoon saying that that commitment to Chandler Hutchison actually might not even have come from the Bulls or the Pacers, the two teams rumored.
No, the latest is it's the Brooklyn Nets at 29.
Right, so So to me, that doesn't mean that the Bulls didn't commit to him or don't already like him. That just to me says, okay, then maybe there's a little bit more volatility here than we're thinking. But I like Chandler Hutchinson's game, especially if they take a big man or they take a wing. I think he's going to be aggressive as hell and going to be the type of player that you're talking about with Mikal Bridges at number seven, a type of player that can be a plug and play right away. Coming off with that second unit and being able to score and rebound is definitely a plus for me.
That's fair. I got no problem with you putting Hutchinson as your number one. For me, this is the little flip that I was just alluding to. I think I've bumped Jacob Evans above Hutchinson at this point. Evans is the wing from Cincy that we've certainly talked about before on this show. And as much as Hutchinson may have the edge as far as height and wingspan, 6'7", 7'1 wingspan, as opposed to Evans, who's 6'6", with a 6'9 wingspan. 6'9 wingspan at the wing is still nothing to sneeze at. And Evans, to me, I just think he's a tougher player. He's got nearly 20 more pounds of muscle on his frame than Hutchinson does at this point. He's a year younger, and I think he just has a certain element of toughness to his game, especially defensively, that the Bulls are really lacking right now. You know, hopefully they can get some of that toughness on the defensive end back if they do, in fact, bring back David Nwaba. If they don't, Jacob Evans can come in and be the new David Nwaba, essentially, except a guy who can shoot the three, which Nwaba can't do. He shot 38% over his career at Cincy, and I think absolutely that can translate to the NBA. I just think this Bulls team needs somebody tough right now, and to me, Evans is not quite as athletically and lengthily gifted as Chandler Hutchinson, but I think he's not that much far off from the places where he has shortcomings compared to Hutchinson, and I think that toughness is just something that I really like. I went back and watched some more tape on Evans and specifically from this Cincinnati season. I just really like that kid. He's actually been falling on some people's draft boards down to like the late 20s, you know, even like maybe 30 or early second round. To me, I think he's absolutely worth a pick at 22. He's my number one.
I like the pick for Jacob Evans, too, and I wouldn't be mad with either of those guys. He kind of fell off my board just because I felt like maybe he was going to slide down, like you had said, maybe to the back three picks in the first round or maybe somewhere at the early second round. And hell, if that happens, I'd love to see the Bulls maybe entertain the idea of trying to find a way back into that end of the first round or maybe pick up a second round pick if he's still available there in the second round to take him. Could you imagine that if they took Chandler Hutchinson at number 22 and then got back into the lottery, got back into the first round or the early second round, was able to take Jacob Evans? And another thing too is, Really wish the Bulls had that Pelicans pick and they didn't have to include it in the Nico deal, because I feel like in the early part of the second round, there's still a lot of really good talent there available that might slide out of this first round. So I really wish they were able to keep that Pelicans pick in that second round.
Yep, no second round pick for the Bulls this year. Surprise, surprise.
Matt has his number one going at Mohamed Bamba at number seven. As do I at number seven, Mohamed Bamba. A little bit of a difference here at number 22. I've got Chandler Hutchinson and Matt has Jacob Evans. So definitely interesting. I think whoever the Bulls decide to take at either of these picks, probably a pretty safe bet that I can come away comfortable. Anything that the Bulls can do, Matt, real quick, at number seven or number 22 that would make you want to tear your hair out,
I mean,
and be completely disgusted with this team after Thursday night.
We know how I feel about Trae Young and Michael Porter Jr. If the Bulls do end up taking one of those two guys, I'm not going to tear my hair out and I'm not going to be, you know, inconsolably pissed off about it. I will be skeptical and I'll be worried. But I'm an optimist by nature. I will try to find a way to look at it in a positive light, and I'll try to look at the upside of those two young players. There's really not a whole lot that the Bulls could do at seven that will make me tear my hair out, so to speak. And unless they just do something completely crazy and out of left field and take a guy that nobody's talking about, that only they have scouted and that they are, quote, really high on, that all of us are looking around and talking to each other saying, like, wait, but, like, you mean that guy that everybody else had projected to go in the late teens or the early 20s? Like, you took him seven? Like, what are you talking about? So, like, maybe a bit of a reach there, talking earlier about the number seven pick with, you know, maybe Mikal Bridges being a reach or Miles or Kevin Knox being a reach. yeah, maybe that's kind of a bummer and a disappointment if that's what happens with the Bulls at 7. Still, I mean, it wouldn't be the end of the world. At this point, I'm just so ready to get this draft over with. And then once we know the pick, we can all form our opinions about it. But, I mean, I don't think there's any sort of catastrophe, end-of-the-world scenario here for the Bulls. They are a team in such need of talent that it's going to be hard for them to go wrong.
I'm going to give you one scenario real quick. If the Bulls decide to trade up to Memphis at number 4, and they take Michael Porter Jr. there, and guys like Marvin Bagley, Jaren Jackson Jr., Mohamed Bamba are still on the board, I will throw a fit.
Okay.
I will throw an absolute fit.
I didn't know that ridiculousness was in the realm of possibility that we were talking about. If they trade up to take Porter when somebody like Jackson or Doncic is still on the board, I would absolutely have a conniption fit.
So I the likelihood of that happening, I don't think, is very high, but hell, we've seen the Bulls do stupider things in the past. So I'm definitely with you, though. I'm ready for draft talk and mock drafts to be completely over. Just be able to analyze these guys that are going to be on the Bulls at number 7 and number 22. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Real quick, we made our pick at number 22. If you want to listen to that, we posted it on our Twitter page. You can go to LockedOnNBA.com. Hear Jeremy Wu from Sports Illustrated's commentary on who we took at number 22 and at number 27. I think he's got a lot of really good things to say about both Chandler Hutchinson and even Marvin Bagley at number 7 that we took in the mock draft. So go ahead and go listen to that over at LockedOnNBA.com. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, we are out, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. If you want to leave us a voicemail for tomorrow's Mailbag Draft Edition, you can do that at 331-979-1369. All of your text and voicemails there. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, we are out, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.